We are in Genesis chapter 41, and we've got some verses to look at, and I'm very excited about what's taking place right here. Of course, you've got the biblical story, but I've spent some time researching, and there's some archaeologists and some researchers that have put some things together. I'm not going to get very far into it tonight. I'm going to scratch the surface, but there's some pretty strong evidence for Joseph in Egypt and his activity lining up with the Bible, right place, right time. If, again, and this is just my poster. I mean, this is not like, you know, this is just me taking the dates of the Bible, adding this year to this year to this person's age, and we end up like this. And if you look, let's start looking on page in here. I've handed out to you also a six-page paper that has all the pharaohs going back from before Abraham all the way up until sometime in the book of Judges. Going all the way up until past the time of the kings of Israel. So that's on six pages, on three sheets printed on six pages. But if you look on page 8 of the notes I've given you with what says Genesis on the front, we're looking there. I've got the Dynasty 11 and Dynasty 12 on page 8. Are you with me? I've got six pages of just pharaohs listed. And then I've got these notes for tonight that's got a pharaoh, a picture of a Senwosret II. He became pharaoh in 1887. But he, if you notice right there, is the 1, 2, 3, 4th pharaoh of the 12th dynasty. The 12th dynasty began in 1981 B.C. and continued up to 1802 B.C. Before that was the 11th dynasty in the Middle Kingdom. And it appears Jacob would be born in 2006, according to our schedule here, and that's during the reign of an individual named Mentuhaptet II. And then Abraham dies in 1991 B.C., and that's during the reign of Mentuhaptet III, who ruled from 2000 to 1988 B.C. And then you've got the rest of the 11th dynasty. But beginning the 12th dynasty is Amenemhat the first, and we're going to find out that he was not royalty. He's identified in Egyptian writings as the son of someone, meaning it's kind of like that driver's license of that immigrant they had in Texas. Did you see that illegal immigrant that had a truck driver's license and the name was made out to no name? They pulled him over because it was some kind of violation, and he had a driver. He had a truck permit, a semi, what's it called? CDL. A CDL, and it was made out to no name available. And so it's like, yeah, but nonetheless, that's another conversation. This guy, Amenemhat, became pharaoh, but it appears that he was not, his father was nobody, as far as being recognized. So in other words, there was a revolt and the establishment of that 12th dynasty. And if you go down, you got Amenemhat the first, then Senwosret the first, Amenhotep the second, and then Senwosret the second. And that is most likely the one that Joseph is standing in front of in our story in chapter 41. He interprets the dreams. We've got him on this chart right around 1887. He's interpreting the dreams, which is the first year of Senwosret the second. It's the same, the first year. So Pharaoh's having these dreams, and it's his first year in power. So that would correlate. Now, you understand what I'm doing. We've got the biblical story that we believe is inspired. I'm putting dates on it the best I can lined up with Scripture, but these dates are not necessarily accurate, but they're close. Then we've got, I went through a couple Egyptian sites and got these dates of the king's reigns, and even Egyptologists are discussing that, but this is kind of where the meat comes down at of where this is at. So you've got the absolute, what I'd say, Word of God. You've got my estimate based on Scripture, the dates and ages of these people. And then you've got Egyptologists putting all their information together, and you've got that correlation. So putting them together is, if you disagree with that, that's fine. That doesn't make you a heretic. It doesn't make me a heretic if I've got the dates wrong. So I'd be a heretic if I'm saying this is absolutely right, this is inspired. Now I'm wrong. But I'm trying to put the pieces together. So that's just what you're looking at right there. And then after that, I've got some detail. We'll come back and look at the bottom of page 8. And I'm going to show you a few things tonight. So let's go back to page 1. And as you know, Joseph was remembered by the cupbearer working for the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh that he's working for at this time would have, you know, shared these dreams. And he said, I remember, as he's listening to Pharaoh talk to his men, I remember someone that interpreted my dream. And he's in prison, so they go bring Joseph in, and he interprets it, explains it, and then kind of advises the Pharaoh. And here we go, Genesis 41, verse 37, it says, this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all of his servants. They're like, wow, that sounds like a plan. Chapter 41, verse 38, and Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? Now, what he's probably saying there is, here's this man, he's not trained in, you know, infrastructure or city bureaucracy or, you know, city planning or agriculture. He just walks in here and we tell him the dreams. He interprets the dreams, clearly understanding them, and then actually makes application of the dreams right into our infrastructure, and meaning he's speaking by the Spirit of God. He's not talking from his academic experience or his college training or his family background. He's God is speaking through him. That's what Pharaoh's saying. Now again, when he says Spirit of God, he's not necessarily referring to Yahweh, Elohim. He's referring to the Spirit. They've got many gods. But he's recognizing that Joseph is not speaking as a trained professional. He's speaking with divine insight. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, there's going to be three times Pharaoh says something to Joseph in these next verses. First thing he does is he says to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. He's going to give him the position. He's going to give him the assignment. There's no one like, or he identifies. You shall be over my house. Now again, what is my house refer to that? Does that mean you're over the cupbearer and the baker and all my stuff here in the palace? Or does it mean his family and the estate where he came from somewhere? His father and his grandfather and great-grandfather were pharaohs. And so it's his estate. Or is he talking about that he's the Pharaoh, he's the one that's in charge of Egypt, which is his house? And we're going to find out he's talking not about his palace, not about his estate, but he's talking about the land of Egypt. He says, God has shown you all this. There's no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. I will make the executive decisions from my throne. I won't be using an auto pen, and I won't be using you, but everything besides my executive orders, you're going to make all those decisions. You're going to be in charge of, you know, the vaccinations. You're going to be in charge of the land. You're going to be in charge of the vitamins and the food. You're in charge of all of it. And that's what those things, the house of Pharaoh is his administration over Egypt. This is the third house Joseph has been placed in charge of, because he's in charge of Joseph's house. He's in charge of Potiphar's house. Now he's in charge of Pharaoh's house. And right there, the point 4 on page 2, the literal translation where it says, your word shall be rule for all my people, literally it says, I've got them circled there, I've written them down. They translate that, the word pika, as your word, and the word yasak as shall be ruled. But actually, the word pika comes from the word mouth, and the word yashak is the word kiss. And so literally it says, just a rough reading, is, and on your mouth all my people shall kiss. So, I mean, obviously, what's that mean? Which seems to mean simply obey. You can go through a lot of different, because it's been translated by Hebrews, by different writers, Israeli scholars from the Old Testament time to New Testament time. It's translated by the Septuagint. It's translated by early Christian writers are translating this. And they're all over the map, but it says, and that, well, and on your mouth all my people shall kiss. So on your mouth they should kiss. It means, in a sense, pay homage. They will honor, and your mouth, they're going to honor whatever is on your mouth. And what's on his mouth, well, his lips, correct. But what they're not interested in his lips, they're interested in the words that come from his lips, and they're going to honor those words. So I think a safe translation is just, it's not that big a deal. It's just interesting on how you can get deep into the Hebrew and the words are saying something to the effect, and on your mouth all my people shall kiss. It's like, what's he talking about? Well, the words that come out of Joseph's mouth will be honored by all the people. Anything he says, they're going to do. And that's a wild statement, because Joseph, and you're going to see, and you know the biblical story, but when you put this in history, it amazes me, and I'm intimidated by how much information we've got. Once you tap into the 12th dynasty, you tap into Senwosret II, and you see what's taking place right here. I'm going to show you a little bit tonight, but I'm going to spend another night going over some more things, because it's really amazing, I think. Okay, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, that's the second thing, time he said to him, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. So that's different. He gives him his commission, then he puts him in the position. And then Pharaoh took his signet ring, and we know what a signet ring is. That's the auto pen. Okay, there's your auto pen. If you want an auto pen in the book of Genesis in Egypt, that's it. That's the, when he takes the signet ring and hands it to Joseph, that's the auto pen. Except it's still going to be run by Joseph. It's not going to be just handed around to the secretaries, and whoever wants a pardon gets to sign it. Joseph will be the one to take care of it. Took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed. I mean, can you imagine what that is like? The most powerful move you can make. This is the Pharaoh's signature. He takes it off, and I've got other things I'll be taking care of, but you are going to take care of anything that requires my approval. And Joseph, you make those decisions. I mean, that's an amazing feat. And put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put a gold chain around about his neck. All this makes sense when you look at Egyptian culture. And he made him ride in his second chariot, and they called out before him, bow the knee, bow the knee. You're just like, you're going to kiss his lips, or you're going to obey his words. When you see him, you're going to bow your knee in obedience. Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. So it starts off his house. You mean like the what he drinks and what he eats, or his estate? Well, no. We're talking about the whole land of Egypt, including executive orders, what we would call them. Moreover, and here's the third time, Pharaoh said to Joseph, for the third time he says something. And this is not an ongoing conversation. In fact, I've got them written down right here. This is the third speech Pharaoh gives to Joseph. The first one was Pharaoh's intention. The second was Pharaoh implementing it. And now Pharaoh's confirmation. This is now confirmed, and we begin today. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up a hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Now, what's interesting about this, somewhere in history, somewhere in the land of Egypt, in their ancient history, there was a man named Joseph that was in charge of everything and gave approval for everything that happened. Business transactions, imports, exports, everything. Because we've got to get ready for, we've got 7 years to get ready for 7 years of disaster. And so Joseph is going to go into micromanaging. And somewhere in Egyptian history, you should see something like this transpire. And I think it fits right where I'm going to show you. Not that it's absolutely right, but it's man, it looks good. So Pharaoh, he gives his intention, implements his plan, and then confirms it. And no one in Egypt will be able to buy, sell, own property without Joseph's oversight. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath Paniah, and he gave him in marriage Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Now, three things happened there. First of all, he's given an Egyptian name. The best we can do on the, it's never mentioned again. Joseph calls himself Joseph when he introduces himself to his brothers. His brothers identify him as Joseph. Moses refers him as Joseph for the rest of the book. This name never comes up again. And again, one commentator says if it had any kind of significance, like what does it really mean, Moses would have given it, which means thus and so. So best we can do is, it seems like it says something like God speaks and he lives. Or the God has said, quote, he will live. So it's something about God speaking and Joseph living, or God speaking and Joseph is now here. So somehow connecting Joseph's words, Joseph's life with God has put him there. So that's the best we can do with what that means. Asenath, his wife, you could be concerned, you know, like, wow, he's marrying an Egyptian. Is this a violation? Especially the name, it means belonging to Neith, which Neith is an Egyptian goddess. So this is a young girl. Her father's a priest, and she has been dedicated to one of the Egyptian goddesses. And she is the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. Now, Potipharah is the same name form as Potiphar. So Joseph worked in Potiphar's house and had trouble with Potiphar's wife. Now he's with another Potiphar and marries Potiphar, the priest of On, his daughter. But it's not the same. It's not the same. Some people try to make, oh, it's the same person. Well, no, one was over the prison, over the guards. The other is a priest from On, two different places. And so that's what that means. And it means, his name, Potipharah, means he whom Re has given. And Re, or Ra, is the sun god. That's going to come up throughout history. Now, last verse we have here, well, I think we got one more. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh. So this whole time, how old was he at Potiphar's house? How many years was he in prison? All these questions. Last thing we heard was he was 17 when he went looking for his brothers. You know that. Now in this verse, he's 30. So the time he went up to Dothan to look for his brothers until he's now put in charge of the whole land of Egypt was 13 years. So if you ever want to ask, I wonder how long God is going to test me. How long will this test last? Well, we got the example of, well, Job. You've got David going through some tests. But you've got a test for Joseph that began when he was a 17-year-old teenager in charge of his father's house, being put in charge of somebody else's house, lied about and deceived, ends up in prison, all these heartaches, and now he's 30 years old, and God brings him out for his plan. So it was a 13 years of obscurity, and so you can divide it up how you want to. We do know in chapter 41, verse 2, Joseph was released from prison after 2 years. There was a time that it mentions that he'd been there for 2 years and he brought him out. But anyway, he's 30 years old at this time, that which is interesting. And he's going to begin working on these projects. Now, what else do I want to look at? Oh my gosh, I've got another whole page. Okay, well, let's go ahead. Page 7. I said one more verse. I was thinking 47, but it's 57. So here's what he does. During the 7 plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly. Now, during those 7 years, Joseph's going to be very active, and I think we can see what is taking place. I'm going to show you it. And he gathered up all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food from the fields around it. So the cities are going to have, you know, they're going to be people collecting food and putting it in storage bin, granaries in each city from the fields around. Everything's growing. Everything's prospering there in Egypt at that time. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he ceased to measure it, for he could not measure, could not be measured. I mean, he's going to try to keep record of it, but it gets to the place where there's no way we can keep counting. This is just, we're too busy piling it up. Before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Aseneth, the daughter of Potiphar, a priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of the first one Manasseh. Now again, you know this, but you're going to want to remember Manasseh. For he said, God has made me forget all the hardship and all my father's house. So he's no longer thinking about his father's house. He's completely into the Egyptian world and everything, all of his hardships. He's got a chariot. He's got runners in front of him. He's got people bowing down. He says, jump. They say, how high? He's got Pharaoh's ring. Everything, he's got everything. So that Manasseh means that. And Manasseh is going to be very important. It's going to become one of the tribes because Joseph is going to be mentioned sometimes in the list of 12, the 12 tribes, but sometimes Joseph is not mentioned, and instead Manasseh and Ephraim, his second son, are mentioned. And you can see these, he actually gets a double portion. So that when they name the 12 tribes, they may leave Levi off, and leave Joseph off, but those two spots are replaced with Manasseh and Ephraim, and now Joseph has, his name's not mentioned, but his two sons are, and they've got that. And of course, Manasseh and Ephraim have a lot of territory. Ephraim ends up being the name for Israel sometimes. Manasseh ends up having territory on both sides of the Jordan, if you remember that story. But nonetheless, Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget my hardships and all my father's house. Chapter 41, verse 52, the name of his second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. I spelled that wrong. Did you see that? I always do this. I have trouble spelling. Did I do it right this time? Made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Okay, so he's got these two sons, and they're going to be very important as the rest of the book goes on. They're going to be crucial throughout the rest of the Old Testament. They're going to make appearances in the 12 tribes mentioned in Revelation with a little twist in that. So, I mean, this is going to go on forever. Verse 41, 53. Chapter 41, verse 53. The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end. So he, besides managing all the food, storing up grain that they couldn't count, he's got two sons. The 7 years are over. And the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said, right like clockwork. There was famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So that famine's not just in Egypt. It's, you know, as you know, it's going all the way up the coast, up into Syria, up into Asia Minor possibly. It's going down south of Egypt. It's going over into Babylon, Chaldea. It's going west down the Mediterranean coast in Africa. But Egypt's got plenty of grain. But all in the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. So they ate everything they had. They went to the grocery stores, emptied the grocery stores out, and Joseph's just sitting there waiting. His government plan apparently is wait until they need help. He's not like, well, here we're going to manage it. We're not going to give you anything until you cry for help. And so they ran out of food. I mean, was it a month? Was it 6 months? Was that at the end of the first year? Probably earlier than that. They ran out of food. I mean, I'd run out. If I can't get to the grocery store, like, we're supposed to go to the grocery store once a week. You have the same situation. We go every week. We go get groceries. Except the next day we forgot milk, so we go get milk. And then the next day we forgot, well, Tony's going to make something and we need this. And then, you know, whatever. And so we go like, sometimes we only go once a day. But no, we usually go once a week and maybe one or two other times. But the goal is once a week. But you know, so I'd be out of food by tomorrow afternoon, which is also a very scary concept. Now watch what happens. Verse 55, when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. What he says to you, do it." So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened up all the storehouses. Now remember, there's storehouses outside of every city that they've been collecting grain from, and sold it to the... He didn't start a government program where free food for the hungry. It's like, we have food, but we can sell it. We'll sell it to you for money, cash, whatever the medium of exchange was. For the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain because the famine was severe over all the earth. So they're coming from the south. They're coming down the coast from the west side. They're coming down from the north. How far north it goes, we got details of that. But he's selling to everybody and they're making money. Now what's going to happen, that's the end of our account for tonight. We got more coming. But what's going to end up happening, as you know, is the people are going to run out of money. And he's going to say, well, looks like I'll start selling you grain for property. And they start selling him farmland for grain. And now Pharaoh has all the cash. Then Pharaoh's got all the land. He's got all the buildings. And they come and they say, you know, there's still 2-3 years left. What are we going to do? He goes, well, he says, what do you have? They go, we don't have anything. He goes, well, we can buy you. And he buys the people. They become the property of Pharaoh. They buy up everything and he gives it to Pharaoh. And now Pharaoh has just been sitting there without his signet ring. And by the end of the 7 years, he controls all of Egypt. Not just owns the land, he owns the people. He has all the money, which again, I'm not promoting that kind of government, but you can understand what Joseph did. And that shows up here in this information that I'm going to show you. One of the things I'm going to say before I forget, and I got so many things I want to share with you. Here is the land of Egypt. There's the Nile River. This is the Red Sea coming up like this. If you want the Dead Sea, Jordan River, Sea of Galilee, don't get lost. The land at this time, because it's an ancient land, and this is not accurate, but there was like these like the priest of On. This might be a land called On. And in this land of On, there would be a governor-like. There would be like a mayor. There would be like the head of it. They're called gnomes or something like this. Gnome, it's coming up there. And what happens during the 12th dynasty, during Senwosret the first reign, is these gnomes disappear. They no longer... There used to be a pharaoh, and there'd be governors, like the president with 50 governors. By the end of the 7 years, the governors are gone, the states are gone. It's just the land of Egypt under Pharaoh. And all these positions of power have disappeared, and that happens during this 12th dynasty. And there's several things. It's nonstop. Here we go. Now go back to page one. This Senwosret. This is not Bible. This is me... And I've got books I've been studying. I've got many more things I've got to read. But just look at this. This is Senwosret the second. Again, it also can be pronounced Senuseret the second. Was the fourth pharaoh of the 12th. This is now right here. What I'm reading you is out of Wikipedia, okay? And I know Wikipedia's got, it can be biased one way or the other. But this is basic history. He was the fourth pharaoh of the 12th dynasty. He took a great deal of interest in the, here it is, Fayum, this right here, F-A-Y-Y-U-M, that's spelled with F-A-I. Fayum is this land right here. I'll show you, we're just getting a background. I'm just laying an early foundation. The oasis region and began work on an extensive irrigation system from, this is Wikipedia, Ba Yusuf, the word Yusuf is the name Joseph. Ba means stream. It means canal. It means river. It was that way in the ancient world. It was that way during the Roman world. When the Muslims came in, they maintained it because it still matches their prophet, Joseph. Everybody was a prophet for the Muslims. I mean, Abraham was their prophet. Joseph, David was their prophet. Jesus was the last prophet before the last prophet, Muhammad. I mean, they claim everything. But they didn't change it. It's still, and I'm going to show you maps. You Google it. You Google Earth. It's still called Bar Yusef, or the stream of Joseph, through to the lake. Now, this guy right here, Senwerset, is the one who dug that. Now, he didn't even have a signet ring in the story. So, he didn't do anything. He just sat in his throne. And Joseph ran around and signed all the documents and gave all the orders. But he gets all the credit because he's the Pharaoh. And that's what he wanted. Joseph's fine with that. And he dug it through to Lake Moris through the construction of a dike at El Lahun, right here, a place called L-A-H-U-N, El Lahun. That's a dike was put there to control the flow of water. Now, we're going to see where Lahun is at. In fact, I'll just throw it out there. Before this time, because I looked it up, it's everywhere. It's not like I found some secret information. But Senwerset, the second, the Pharaoh that you see on that first page, during his reign, he began ruling and reigning up here in this area where Giza and the pyramids are, the Acropolis there. There's a city. I've got it written down there. It starts with a D. During this time period, he decides, you know what he's going to do? He's going to move down here. So he moves down here to this oasis, Lahun, where the stream, the river of Joseph, comes up and cuts right through and waters it and turns it into an oasis. He decides to move from here, where all of the ancestors and all the pharaohs had lived. That's Giza. That's Cairo. That's where all go look at the pyramids. He says, you know what? I'm moving down here, and builds this pyramid down here, which is right there by the dike that controls the flow of water for the stream of Joseph. I'm reading Wikipedia, okay? I'm not reading a Bible commentary or Bible history. I'm reading Wikipedia. All we did is do the dates, boom, same date. There it is. This doesn't mean it's true. What I'm telling you is true according to Egyptian history. If this has anything to do with Joseph, the Bible tells its story, but so far it's kind of cool. All right. He constructed a dike at El Lahun, and the addition of a network of drainage canals. The purpose of his project was to increase the amount of cultivatable land in that area. So there's going to be this, and again, if I go through here, and I'm going to show you some better maps, that canal of Joseph runs parallel with the Nile River, and then cuts here through the oasis. And then from that canal, that land, there's drainage routes running off of there just like this. What it looks like a watering system for your front yard. If someone comes in and draws this for you in your front yard, it's like, oh, they're putting an underground watering system in for my grass. Well, someone had dug this canal during this time period, and then they dug channels or some kind of drainage off of it like this. And what that drainage did then, it watered all this land here and all this land here, and this becomes an oasis right here in the middle of Egypt. And it happens right exactly during the 7 years of plenty. It says, the importance of this project is emphasized by Senwerset's second decision to move the royal necropolis, from Dashur to El Lahun. So right here, Dashur was the city he was at up here by Giza, Cairo, where all the pyramids are. He decides, I want to move down here, and I want to dig a canal and water all this land right here, and he builds his pyramid for his death right here. Now, if you notice right here, this is all cut and paste right off of Wikipedia. I'm just underlining parts of it. That says this location would remain the political capital of the 12th and 13th dynasties of Egypt, Sin-Uzret II was known for his praenomen, whatever that name, how do you pronounce it, which means the Ka of Ra comes to being, which means Ra, the soul of Ra, comes into life. The king also established the first known workers' quarter in a nearby town named Kahun, Kunan or whatever. So he has right here, builds a city. No one's ever done this before, but they have a city. It's just for the workers for the grain bins. They just live here and just collect grain. And that was the first city like that. So that's what we talk right there. Turn the page, go over to page 3. And I just did this. I could have got it out of, I got a number of books, encyclopedias. I could have got from Britannica. I could go find some Bible teacher somewhere. I didn't find anybody doing a really good job online. There's some good YouTube videos, but I didn't find a good site with this information. I really was trying to find just a site where I just cut and paste someone else's material. It's out there somewhere. It's in books, but one of the books, I actually even looked at Amazon. I thought, you know what would be easier? If I just bought everybody a book. I just give everybody a copy of the book. It's just $50 a copy. I'd bought one and I had it. And I thought, you know what, I might just, sometimes you go on Amazon, they're like, you know, $250 and, you know, garage sale stuff. This was not. It was right up there with my Jerusalem book, you know, $50 to $70 a copy. And of course, I can give mine free. Okay, now, right here, Wikipedia, page 3, Ba-Yusef. Ba-Yusef, Arabic, you got the Arabic spelling. In English, it means the waterway of Joseph. Now, what's interesting about this, well, that's just, they just named something that. Except, yeah, they could have just named, yeah, well, let's name this the waterway of Joseph, except the Bible doesn't say anything about Joseph cutting a canal. But also, this canal was cut during this first, second year that Joseph was with this Pharaoh. So, I mean, it's cut at the right time, named by the right person, and it stayed the whole way through. Going down the modern, I just what's underlined there. There's a picture of it. There's a little picture you can see right there. That's the canal. See, it's just a canal. It's just water draining off the Nile into other drains going off the water. So it's just a flow of water. Just water just flows downhill into the fields. The modern Arabic name refers to the prophet Yusuf, the Quranic counterpart of the biblical Joseph. So now when the Muslims take over, they're going to leave it there because it matches their ideas too. In prehistoric times, the canal was a natural distributary of the Nile, which created a take to the west during high floods. Beginning with the 12th dynasty, and that's what we're talking about, the waterway was enlarged and the Fayum was developed. The Fayum, right here, I had that word written here, F-A-Y-Y-U-M. I'm going to show you pictures of it. That's this oasis. It wasn't an oasis. You're going to see it's in the middle of the desert, but it became an oasis and remains an oasis today. And the Pharaoh's going to move down here to this oasis, and the Fayum was developed and enlarged to enlarge Lake Moriah, and I'll show you a picture of that. The canal was built into a natural incline of the valley, creating a channel 15 kilometers long and 5 meters deep, they're adding on to it, that sloped into the Fayum Depression. That's this city right here. It's going to become an oasis. The canal was controlled by the Ha'er Dam, which was actually two dams that regulated the flow into the lake and out of the Nile. And the surrounding area changed at about 230 BC. The Bashir Yusuf eventually became neglected, leaving most of Lake Mora to dry up, creating a depression that exists yet today in the modern Fayum Oasis. The Bar Yusef still exists today, feeding water northwards into the Fayum Oasis, parallel with the Nile. Now we go to some pictures. These are just Google Maps. Now what I've got here, is this making sense at all? Is this making sense? Because it was really hard for me to figure all this out and get my mind wrapped around it. There's our Nile River. If you look in that first picture, if you remember, right up here was what was it, Dershun, where the king came from, where Giza's at. He moved down here. And what you can see the Nile River on that first picture. And then I've got circled over there in a circle, it says, right off Google Maps today, Bar Yusef You can see the river right there. That's a canal. And right there beside it is says the pyramid of Luon or Luhan. That is the pyramid made by Senwarsret II. He went down there and made his pyramid right there where Joseph's canal. Right? He went down here, moved to the city, Luhan. The canal is going to come up like this and cut right through here and forming a lake right here. So it connects right. It runs along here. And then Joseph extended it all the way through here, runs the tributaries off right there. And you can see that first picture, and then I zoom in on it a little bit. This picture at the bottom of page 4, you can see I've got it circled. You can see the winding river. You know, it cuts across the page. That is written. I've got it underlined there. You can't see it because it's so small. But that says Bar Yosef. But then you can see the more of the straight human cut channel. And that is, in the circle, Bar Yosef Canal. So one is the river or a flow. The other is an actual channel that is cut. And they're flowing this way. Turn the page to page 5. And now you can see Bar Yosef right there in the middle. It's labeled. And there you can see the straight line, a little bit of the straight line, a little bit of the curving line. But it's moving into that canal feeds that up right up here in the top left right up here. That is that city of Fayum right here. This is that city right here, Fayyum. That's the city that's in the circle. That water's being, and that became an oasis in the 1800s during the 12th dynasty. And that is where he's going to build his pyramid at that place. And that extends even further if you look at the next picture. Now I've got geographical maps. Now you can see that square and that top picture, the square right there in the middle, that's this city right here where he built his pyramid. And that's the canal. You can just see the canal flowing in and being watered, flowing into the city, and then from there it branches out, and it created that Fayum oasis. That lake right there was formed by it. That was created, and all that turned green. The picture below that, you've got a broader picture, more like what I've got here, and you can see where they came from. He moved from this area right here where the pyramids were up here, where Giza's at, and he moved down here where this other green spot's at. That's the circle of the city, and there's that lake I was talking about. You can see it right there. Obviously, you can see it better if it's in color. But that whole area, that's Joseph's river, Joseph, the stream of Joseph, watering that area there, and producing. Now, what, and I haven't got the information for you yet, but at the end of each of these canals in these areas, they found huge areas of, now all the cities during those 7 years, they had storage bins around all the cities that they collect the grain for those people in that area. But over here, these are pits. There's like a structure up above for grain. But below it is one, two pits. They're 3 stories tall. Just the first two are in the basement. And all throughout this, there's just, it's like a storage unit. It's like a, you know, yeah, a storage unit. You go to a storage unit, they just got, you know, on a rental space or storage space. This was just 3 stories high, with the first 2 stories being the ground, of just storage for grain on both sides of this Yosef Canal where these channels went out here. So there, he just turned this area into a breadbasket. And just started just cranking out the grain and storing it 3 deep. And that's being excavated now. They go, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is an agricultural center that the king, the Pharaoh, whatever you want to do, here's my signet ring. When Joseph starts this, he picks up from where all the ancient pharaohs built their pyramids. He goes down here in the 12th dynasty and builds his pyramid down here and lives in this oasis down here. Eventually, they're going to move back up here. The pharaohs are eventually going to move back up in this area. But this 12th dynasty and 13th dynasty came down here as their home base. And it's like, why were they doing that? We don't know. They're all focused on agriculture. They're all focused on producing grain and storing grain. It's like, except the biblical date says that's the year Joseph came out of prison. And the Egyptian historians say that's the year Senwarsret II became Pharaoh, and that's when he would have had his dreams. And they just seem to align right there. All right, turn the page. On page 8, I've got the 11th dynasty and the 12th dynasty, the kings listed there. I've got historical events like Jacob was born 2006 during Mentuhotep II. Abraham dies. You can see that. And there's where Joseph's being sold, Joseph's interpreting dreams, Jacob's going down to Egypt in 1876. Jacob dies in 1859. That's when they're going to bring Jacob's body back up to Canaan. And then Joseph dies in 1805 during this. So you can see he worked with 5 pharaohs that he would have lived through their reigns. Now, the 12th dynasty, I'm going to read this very quickly, bottom of page 8. Now, you understand the 12th dynasty. That first guy is the one who overthrew whatever the middle kingdom was here, the 11th dynasty, and he set up, and that's the guy that comes out of nowhere. And then his 3 pharaohs after him is the one that's working with Joseph. But that first one established the 12th dynasty. He's not royal blood. He's called the son of someone. He rebuilt Egypt. He expanded southward for minerals and gold. Minerals and gold and turquoise are going to be very big, especially the years after Joseph. He moved the capital to the north, the Lisht. He merged the sun god Re with the Theban god Amun to create a god, sun god Amun-Re. He combined people by mixing their gods together. People moving into northern Nubia claimed the second cataract at the southernmost boundary, and Amenhotep I was killed in a palace coup. So he was killed. Senwosret I served 10 years as co-regent with his father. This is the second one. That's this guy right here. He led a campaign into Nubia to build forts near the second cataract. So they're going down south. There's the first cataract is here. The second cataract's down here. He revived the building of the pyramids. Senuset built the largest pyramid of the Middle Kingdom. Stability allowed increase in commercial contact with Syria and Canaan. Syria is going up north where Laban was from. Stories from this time mention people from Canaan in Egypt and Egyptian couriers passing through Canaan. They record that. Mentions of military being deployed into Canaan to keep a trade route open. Egyptian objects in Aram, that's where Laban's from, indicate they've been trading. Now, Amenemhat II, 1919 to 1885, that's when Joseph is sold into Egypt. That's when he's going to spend his time with Potiphar and in prison. Then the guy we're talking about tonight, Senwosret II, Joseph interprets his dream in 1887, which happens to be the same year he becomes Pharaoh. It's just, if that's exactly right, we don't know. His throne name was He Who Makes Justice Appear. These are enlightened leaders who cared about their subjects. The reclamation, what he does, now this is historical, reclamation of flooded land and flood control projects at government expense. They're not going to give the food away, but they're going to raise it for free. And now that they've got it, we'll sell it to the people. So they go into agriculture. Thousands of cultivated acres were added to the delta. That's going to end up being, delta's up here. That's going to be right in here. Delta, that's going to become the land of Goshen. And you know that story. That's coming up. That's going to be this area up here. Records of Nile's height began to be recorded at the second cataract. So they're starting to record how high the waters flow down here. So you know what's going to happen up here. They start weather forecasting. Time of peace, prosperity, and trade with Western Asia. You understand what Western Asia is? That's where Paul had his ministry. That's Asia Minor. That's Turkey. So there's no wars during this time. During this time, there's no wars. That's history. There's no wars at this time, but they are trading way up into Turkey. Noah, right there, point 7, no recorded military campaigns. And a pharaoh records his military campaigns and records how many heads they brought back and how much land they took. Only 6 private stela of Senwosret exist. Usually you find their name all over. There's only 6. He moved from ancient Egyptian pyramid complex and the necropolis of Dashur to Luhan. That's what I've been saying. He moved from here to here. His pyramid and mortuary are at Lahun, which is in this. Phayum Lahun is in the Phayum Oasis right here. And there's a picture. It's not an oasis today. There's a picture of the pyramid he built at Lahun after he moved from the plaza up here, where all the pyramids are. He moved down here. And Luhan means the mouth of the canal. So he moved to a city that means the mouth of the canal, which is where they're feeding. Now here's a better map right here. I've got all those places right here on this map. I've highlighted them. Dashur is right up there in the pyramid complex by Giza, Memphis, right there. He moved down to Lahun, which is at the mouth of the canal at the oasis called Fayum. And then you can see the stream of Joseph coming off the Nile and flowing and watering that whole area. And then there's a place right there called Beni-Hassan. There's a tomb of a guy named Beni-Hassan from this time. He's one of the governors. And it's on the other side of the Jordan, or other side of the... It'd be right about here, if we're going to put it in perspective. It's over here. And on that tomb, he was a... right there. His name is Khnumhotep II. And he was the great chief of the Oryx Nome. Which means... He was the great chief of the Oryx Nome, which means... During this time, he's going to lose everything because there's not going to be any gnomes left after the 12th and 13th dynasty because apparently Joseph bought them all for the Pharaoh. But he has in his pyramid, during the reign of the pharaohs, Amenhotep II and Senuseret II that we're talking about, it's well known because that drawing that you see right there is on his tomb. That drawing is it's interesting because it's got people from, it's got Canaanites or it's got Hebrews coming down there, and they've got the coats. And in fact, if you turn the page, I've enlarged the pictures. That's the first part of it. That first picture on page 11 is people from the land of Canaan, and that is they got the men up front. If you look at that, Steve, you're talking about that head of the image of Joseph from his tomb that we haven't talked about yet. It's broken. It was broken. Someone came in and destroyed his burial place after the Exodus, it would appear. But you can see the upper part, but you can see his hand, and he's holding a throw stick, which represents a shepherd or a leader. It was a sign of leadership, but it's a throw stick that the shepherds used to scare off beasts or animals. And those guys, you see, they're carrying bows up front, but they've also got the exact same throw stick in their hands that the statue of Joseph has. So these are people coming from Canaan down to trade during this 12th dynasty. And that's exactly what Jacob does. Jacob sends his sons down. We need food. Now, this is a mural found on a tomb over here on this side of the Nile River. So it's in Egypt, but it's not in our area here. But that's just interesting. Go back to page 10, and I've got that map on page 10. I'm reading this. Point 12, Luhan was rebuilt as a royal estate to exploit the Rayrum for agricultural purposes. So that's this place right here. It became a dike was built at Luhan to control the Bar Yosef, the waterway. So a dike was built at this time to control the flow of water into these canals that were watering the crops. At Fayum, that's the oasis, whole place is called the Fayum, the oasis. Beside the dike, there was drainage canals dug to create a complex of irrigation system, greatly increasing the cultivated land. I've said that. The Bashar Yosef, the canal of Joseph, was a waterway dug as an offshoot of the Nile that ran parallel to the Nile on the west side into the desert valley. And so you can see that's all laid out on that map right there. In fact, at the bottom of that map on page 10, I've got a line drawn where the first cataract is. So they're measuring, go below that, go further down south. There's going to be a second cataract that's off that map. They were measuring water way down there so they knew what was going to be happening in Joseph's canal to water the oasis that the Pharaoh moved into. This Pharaoh, who gave Joseph his ring, moved down into this area where Joseph is watering it, and that's where he built his pyramid. So a whole change takes place, and that's what I'm showing you is just Egyptian information. That's not like in your Bible notes. That's just what's happening. All I do is compare it. Back page, you can see the Nile River, and then you can see the Yosef's stream. In fact, it's named right there, Ba Yosef, and that is the oasis. And all that detail, we don't have time to go through it, nor do I understand it all, but that's all the research that they've done. There's mountains of information on this oasis. In fact, you can see the lake. Joseph created, call that Joseph's Lake if you wanted to, but that became a lake. He's probably skiing out there on the weekends and stuff. But anyway, there's that story. And a little picture in the top right corner, I've done a pretty good job of scribbling on the board, but that you can see right there in the top corner up there, there's a square showing you where at in Egypt this map is at, so you kind of see where it's at in I didn't understand any of that, where it was at, all these names. I didn't know where any of this place is at. It's not like, you know, Israel, you read stories, look at maps, look at it. I didn't know where the Nile River was. Yeah, I knew that much. Okay, I'll pray. We're done. I've got a lot more information I want to share with you. I hope you find it interesting because I'm kind of unraveling it right now, some information. And we're going to get into, just a little heads up, we're going to get into, in the land of Goshen, there's going to be a place called Avaris, a city, and in that city is going to be a complex that has got houses that are called, they're three-room houses. They're houses that are built like this, something to this effect, like this. This is probably a patio area, and they've got two stories. These houses are called Asian houses or Western houses because these houses, where they come, they're not Egyptian houses. That's not how they build. They have their own style. These houses come from north of Israel, up here in a place called Aram, Syria. You know, where Laban comes from, where Abraham came from, where Sarah and Rebecca and Rachel and Jacob, everybody comes down from there. Well, they're building that down here in Shechem, but eventually they're going to move to Goshen, and guess what kind of houses they're going to build? All of a sudden, popping up during the 12th dynasty is these Asian houses. Right here in Avaris, and in here, this plot right here, this fenced area is like a palace type area. There's one of these houses is here. They're what they call three-room houses or four-room houses. This is probably an open area for the grill. And then there's 11 tombs of in here, and then there's a pyramid shape here. More monumental, and in there was a sarcophagus and a statue twice the human size. Like if you're 6 foot tall, it would be 12 feet tall. And they've excavated all this, and they find 11 burials, an Asian house, many other things, but in this tomb right here, they find a crushed sarcophagus. There's no bones. The body was gone. The coffin had been taken, but the sarcophagus had been crushed, and the statue had been demolished, except for a few pieces, including the from the shoulders up, the head. You can see the shape of the hair. You can see the face. You can see the multi-striped coat that was on it, and he got his hands crossed holding a shepherd's staff, which is a sign of one of the weapons shepherds used up here, which was a symbol of leadership and authority. And this was different than the other 11. So you've got 12 graves here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 11, and then a 12th one right here that had a statue. And everybody is thinking, we just found Joseph's palace. And Joseph, and now his bones aren't there because they came and took the bones. But when they came and took the bones out and all the slaves were gone, what did the Egyptians do? They trashed the place. They weren't very happy. Okay, that's all coming. It's interesting. I'll pray and we're done. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you that your word is true. We thank you that we have guidance from your word. We thank you that we have guidance from your spirit that lives within us and around us. And we do ask that we again would honor your word, that we would not just have information, but we would trust you and live a life that was pleasing to you as Joseph did, that we would do the things you've called us to do at our time in history, just as they did back many millenniums ago. We do thank you for letting us be alive at this time in history, and ask that we would say the things you've called us to and do the things you show us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.